Welcome, space campers, to episode 144 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where robot companions seldom trigger unscheduled space launches. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And that was a reference to the classic movie Space Camp, for those of you who didn't get that.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah, kind of a dream come true movie if you were a kid in the 80s. And very appropriate because tonight we will be discussing NASA. But first, we'll send our audience into orbit with out-of-this-world tales of our exploits in our weekly Geekly Weekly update. Chris, why don't you go first?
Sure. All right, so for Geekly Weekly, I did a couple of things. I saw the animated show War of Worlds Goliath, which is kind of a steampunky set-in-the-future movie where, you know, we basically reverse-engineered the Martians' tripods and... We're trying to have a whole kind of UN national fighting force and the Martians come back. The world, I thought, would have been a great fun playground, but the movie itself was mediocre. But overall, I guess I kind of liked it. Also, I played a couple of board games. I played Cyclades and Kemet, which are two sister board games. One is more of a strategic kind of game where you're bidding for the favor of the gods and then using that favor to snag only two cities on the board. That's all you need to win. Two cities. How hard could that be? And then Kemet was more of a very fast-paced war game, kind of like Risk on steroids. And the kind of a trick of it is that the board was designed so that no matter where you went on the board, you basically bump into each other. So everybody's kind of piled on top of each other. I also had a geeky Valentine's. My girlfriend for Valentine's, she gave me the latest trade paperback for the Saga comic book. If you're not reading this, you should read this. It's just, how can I describe it? It's like a mishmash of like science, fantasy, Alice in Wonderland, yet the relationships are very gritty and very real with each other. So, you know, you get family drama on like an acid trip. It's very cool, and the art in it is just amazing. And what I got her is one of our favorite games we like to play together is called Mice and Mystics, like a mouse guard dungeoneering game, and they sell plush dolls of the two main characters, Colin and Lily, and I got her a little Lily doll, which is a little mouse archer. And I mean, she, you know, I want to brag for a moment, she said I practically read her mind that she knew that's what she wanted for a Valentine's gift. And then to get really into the geeky, I've heard from my readers that they want more about the world of Late Bloomer, so I made a sequel called Second Bloom, and by the time this podcast hits the air, it should be out at Amazon. Both books are basically zombie apocalypse books, or as I call them in there, necropolypse. But if people also like the second book, I can go somewhere with it, because the first book, maybe not so much, because the first one has a twist at the end, and I can't really discuss it in detail. So, but if you liked the first one, you definitely will like the second short story.
Cool, man. I congratulate you on your continued success and your
Thanks.
Positive fan feedback. All right, I guess I will now toss it over to you, Cam.
Oh man, I had a pretty full week, just like Chris. I got in a new Kickstarter I've been waiting on, the Institute for Magical Arts by Dr. Steve Finn, a former guest, the creator of Biblios and Biblios Dice. Looking forward to playing that at game night at the Adventure Game Store on Thursday. Speaking of, played some great games Thursday night, last Thursday at the Adventure Game Store. One of them was Titans of Empyrean, which we played again and did a video review on. Their Kickstarter started just recently, so look on YouTube for that. We're going to post that within the next week or so. And head over to Kickstarter and check out Titans of Empyrean by Nine Kingdoms Games. And then the rest of the weekend was just packed with cons and the Renaissance Fair. Went to Shock Pop Comic Con on Saturday. I was there in a professional capacity helping out Wizard World Con, who, I don't know if you guys know this, but is finally deciding to do a con down here in South Florida. I mean, I think they do like 20, 30 cons a year throughout the country, and they are finally doing one in Fort Lauderdale in October. So the show will hopefully be affiliated with that. And then on Sunday, I went to the Renaissance Fair. had a big turkey leg, shot some arrows, played some of the games, picked up some cool medieval stuff, saw all the costumes, and was also there sort of in a professional capacity a bit, running some Doctor Who stuff and with Julia Rose, good friend and purveyor of Doctor Who knowledge. So that was great, and that about rounded out my week. It was pretty full, and managed to ignore Valentine's Day, so that was good too.
Well done, sir. Well done. And I guess that brings it over to you, Brian. I doubt you ignored that particular holiday.
I did my best. I think I pulled it off. I gotta say though, you guys put me to shame for the activities. The only thing I have is I went on a little bit of a shopping kick. I sold some stuff on eBay that was just laying around the house. I don't even remember what it was. It was like a broken N64 controller or something like that. And there was just some strange bidding war that it went for way more than you could get a new one for. I guess someone needed it for parts. I decided to turn that into an airbrush for my figure painting.
Nice.
So I first off had to learn a lot about airbrush because I basically know nothing. And then I had to spend like day after day after day on Amazon comparing user reviews and everything. So I finally picked out not a terribly expensive one because I don't even know if I'm going to be able to do it or not. So I bought like kind of like mid-range, but I think one that I will be happy with and one that I can possibly grow with. And it only took me like 5 days.
Not bad.
And I mean, you know, 24 hours of each of those days. Not over the course of 5 days. And as I mentioned last week, Darth Vader number one is out. And it's a pretty interesting read. It's not anything terribly new, but it just kind of feels like maybe they're going to go with the this actually happened route. I'm really pulling for them being kind of Disney owned. Maybe these will be canonized.
So good stuff then.
It's pretty good. Like I said, it's not anything like radically different. I think some of the old stories had done that too. Basically, Emperor's pissed off at Vader for losing the Death Star. So Vader has to like go off and like, you know, re-earn his favor. He's kind of like in the doghouse.
Wow. Mm.
But it's pretty cool.
I'm afraid to ask what he has to do.
Well, there's a lot of bloodshed involved.
Just a genocide here or there. Nothing special.
Hopefully it involves massacring the Gungans. That'd be nice. Awesome, man. That sounds like a pretty full week. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay, I guess that leaves me. And a lot of what I have to report echoes what Cam reported. I also checked out the Shock Pop Comic Con. I was very impressed. As a first-year con, I thought they did a really good job. It was it looked like a con that had been around for years. They really packed the hall with some great vendors and guests. I guess the crowd, in my opinion, was... I don't know how to gauge a first-year con crowd. I never expected to be super packed, but they seemed like they got a pretty decent turnout. And I don't know if that was your perception too, Cam. I was there in an unprofessional capacity, so I got to kind of check things out. Did it seem like they sort of packed things in later in the day?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, there's no way of getting around it. I mean, the attendance was light. You know, there was no sugarcoating that. But I think there were a lot of positives. Like you said, the guests were great. I got to sort of hang out and talk to Sylvester McCoy, which is a previous doctor, one of my favorite doctors. So that was just awesome. He came by the booth where I was at and sat and talked to me for 5 minutes and was just the sweetest guy. So that was awesome. I mean, they had Elvira, they had Danny Trejo. Apparently this was his first con ever. And you know, what I really liked about it is that they're sort of trying to carve their own niche. I mean, they are to an extent a scattershot con in terms of they had a lot of variety and vendors and stuff like that, but they really did focus on horror and, you know, the genre of like movies. And they had Elvira, Mistress of the Dark there, who, by the way, still looks pretty hot in her 60s or whatever.
She's yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's still looking pretty good, man. They had like a bunch of different actors and you know, movie people, TV people from the different, you know, horror films and shows from over the years. And I appreciate that because I'm a big movie guy and horror is one of my favorite genres. So, you know, I appreciate that they're trying to carve out their own niche rather than just going for the scattershot. Let's capitalize on, you know, what the kids are like in these days kind of con.
Yeah, I think the name fairly well encapsulates what the con's all about, which is just really a little bit of an, I don't know, I don't have a better adjective than this, but a little bit of an edgier slice of pop culture. Is that fair to say, Cam?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they hit the horror genre, they hit the shock, you know, the shock and horror type area pretty well. They hit the pop culture area pretty well. And then, you know, like you said, there was an impressive array of just things for everyone else. I mean, they had a really huge tabletop gaming section or you know, vendor area, which I thought was great. They had a really big video game play area, which was great. The crafts and art and you know, Artist Row and things like that. They had a really good selection there. You know, it was definitely a con where you could go and walk around for several hours and see a lot of good stuff rather than just, you know, coming away like, oh, every booth was the same, you know?
Yeah. The quality of the vendors and the guests I thought was really impressive. Like I said, something I would expect from a more mature con. So I thought for our first show, they did a pretty good job, and, I hope to see more from them in the future. I hope that becomes a Fort Lauderdale fixture.
Yeah, I'd like to see them back. I mean, I don't know what their economics were. I mean, I don't know if they made money or they took a bath, but I'm assuming most first-year cons, I think you mentioned this when we saw each other Saturday, probably a loss leader anyway, you
yep.
know? So I
yep.
guess it's just a function of how much did they lose and will they decide, you know, if it's worth it or not to do it again next year, which I really hope they do.
Right, right. Hopefully they didn't bet the whole farm on a wildly profitable first year. And we yeah. might be wrong. Maybe they did profit. I have no insight into the finances and how it went, but I'm wishing them well, being that Fort Lauderdale is as close to an official hometown as we have. It's nice to have cons right here. So
absolutely.
Let's see. Apart from that, I hope that you had fun volunteering for Wizard, and I'm looking forward to them coming down. I believe this is their second run at the South Florida area. They might have gone for Miami last time, but now they know where it's at here in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, they did Miami a few years ago, and then now they're thinking they want to be a little more central in Fort Lauderdale and, you know, capture the West Palm Beach and Miami crowds. Because, you know, if you do it in Miami, West Palm Beach is, if you look at the numbers, is severely left out in terms of attendance usually. So I think they're thinking if they can get it done in Fort Lauderdale, they're going to get the best of both worlds. You still draw from Miami, still draw, you know, obviously Fort Lauderdale, and then get the Palm Beach areas as well.
Yeah, I hope that calculus works out. For people unfamiliar with our area, there are three counties in our tri-county area here in South Florida, and we are the center county, and Fort Lauderdale is kind of, it's the county seat and is pretty centrally located within that county, so we are geographically pretty well situated.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, Wizard World is a public company. I mean, I think they probably know what they're doing, so I'm looking forward to their con in October.
Yeah, me too. Awesome. Let's see. So apart from that, also went to the Renfest on Sunday. I was in the company of a lovely Renfest nerd who proceeded to get me the inside track on all kinds of cool Rennies and taught me other secret handshakes and how to... no, none of that happened, but I did get to go with somebody who actually knows her way around the Renfest, and that was fun. That made for a very different experience.
So was she just a regular Ren person, or was she a player?
I believe she used to be a participant. I think she would now be classified as a patron in that she dresses up, and that's what they call patrons who dress in silly costumes for the Renfest.
Yeah, that's what I heard too, is that, you know, if you're volunteering for the RenFest. You're a player, as in, like, you're an actor on the stage sort of thing.
Right.
And if you're just a guy who comes off the street with his kids or with his girlfriend or, you know, by yourself in sneakers, then you're a patron. And then if you're one of those people that want to, how we call it now, cosplay. And those guys, sometimes they get special attention because those were where a lot of players come from later on. They come out of that patron community. Or, you know, those are the people that are just really crazy with their costuming.
Yeah, so you are spot on. That is exactly what a Playtron is, and I walked around with one, so it was cool.
Yeah, and her outfit was killer. It was really cool.
That's right. You saw us, Cam, because you were there, right? And I forgot to mention that we ran into each other there, right? So I will pass on your compliments to that particular Playtron about her outfit. I will also mention that particular Playtron got me a Valentine's gift that makes it clear that she wants me dead. She got me zombie dice, and nice. I do believe that was a very emphatic drop-dead gift. So I'll be proceeding to do that this week. And I'd like to play that at game night. I know you guys are familiar with games in that vein, but I wouldn't mind busting that out, getting familiar with it.
Let's do it.
And then finally, this has been a little bit more drawn-out update than I wanted, but I will say that last night I missed our Tuesday night game night, but it was for a good cause. I wanted some weekly Geekly Weekly update fodder. I went to a live local recording of WWE Main Event / SmackDown, and that was awesome. We seldom get just like regular season, for lack of a better word, events down here, and it was right at the BB&T Center, just west of our fair city. And anybody checking out those shows this week might hear my screams in the background as I was cheering on my favorite wrestler. So I don't know if I think I'm probably the sole like wrestling fan on the podcast, but know that it was exciting for me and I was very happy.
No, I'm a fan as well. And we talked, a friend of mine, Rebecca, actually had tickets, and I had to turn her down because I had to go to the Tuesday night game night and represent the podcast. But I was happy, Tom, that you were able to go, and I'm glad that you had a great time. But I'm curious to know who your favorite wrestler is.
As far as a favorite, I would say that there's a whole stable of wrestlers I consider to be my favorites. One of them who's really getting a kind of decent push right now is Dolph Ziggler. He is a local, and they build him as such by saying he was currently residing in Hollywood, Florida, as he came out. He's pretty good. I like this guy Cesaro, who's kind of a heel right now. You know what? Favorite wrestler? I'll go ahead and say this. I really like this guy named Bray Wyatt, who's sort of this hillbilly cult leader.
Oh, is he the guy that comes out with like the 20 people and they're all just like weirdos and just sort of stand around and like watch him or whatever?
No, that is Adam Rose, and he comes out with like a party troupe. Yeah, he's a goof. Bray Wyatt is better in that he used to have two other like kind of hillbilly type like cultists who would come out with him. But he still comes out to like in pure darkness to this really somber tune and with a lantern and all this fog, and everybody lights up their cell phone flashlights and sways him in unison. He's got like this whole, even the audience are part of his cult, myself included.
Wow.
And he's really cool. And like has this really awesome like backbend spider move that's all creepy looking. I don't know. Look him up, Bray Wyatt.
So he's a 21st century Undertaker then.
Okay, that's an interesting observation and an interesting thought, Chris. There's a lot of speculation in the fan community that they're kind of grooming him to be the new Undertaker now that Undertaker has had his streak broken and is, as rumor would have it, looking to kind of make a permanent exit.
Well, how old is the guy Undertaker now?
I don't have his age. I got to say he's around 50 now, or in his 50s maybe, or maybe he is in his 40s. He just looks old, but he's definitely taken his bumps over the years, and
in wrestling he's a senior citizen with a walker right now.
yeah, I mean, a lot of guys go for quite a while, but Taker has definitely put in his work, and rumor has it he would like to retire while he's still ambulatory, so
don't blame him.
I mean, you know, you get guys like Hogan with their spine fused together. That's not how I'd want to end up. So
yeah, no, for sure.
So Cam, what's your favorite wrestler?
Well, I was gonna say that guy, the guy that you mentioned that is from Hollywood. That's pretty cool, actually, that they've got sort of a local guy. My favorite was always the wrestlers that were from parts unknown, like Kamala, the Ugandan headhunter.
Yes. Yes. You know,
the mystery abounded with those guys. You know, I don't really have a current favorite wrestler, but, you know, I'm old school. I like, you know, Coco Beware.
And, like, nice.
You know, Andre the Giant and, you know, those guys. Those were my favorite back in the day. These days, I'll watch with my brother because he's a big fan. I kind of like the guy, the what's his name? Daniel Bryan.
It's like, yeah, yes, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, that guy. He's pretty, yeah, he's pretty funny. And I like, you know, I like some of the newer guys, but I'm still like, I don't watch it enough to know all of their shticks or whatever. But, you know, I'm getting back into it slowly but surely as I spend more time with my brother.
Awesome, man. There's some quality guys in there. We're definitely not in a golden age necessarily, but there's some decent talent for sure.
Wasn't there like a scandal recently of some sort?
Scandal involving what?
Like the wrong guy won or something?
Oh,
at some event?
Yeah. Okay. Briefly, and this has become a mini wrestling discussion. But yeah, very briefly. The Royal Rumble pay-per-view recently was won by a guy named Roman Reigns, who, in spite of being like, you know, having an impressive physique and being pretty good and all this and being a handsome man that all the chicks love, just isn't really over with the fans yet. And so people were very disappointed that he came away the winner and that he is now a contender for the championship against Brock Lesnar, who is a certified badass. I may have mentioned this in previous episodes, but happy to mention it again. So that is the current state of things. And so they've got him. They're actually pitting him against Daniel Bryan, I guess trying to get a little more momentum or steam or something behind him.
Gotcha.
Very interesting. Wrestling is... Bryan, I'm trying to get you on board, man. Are you hearing all of these intrigues and everything? And this doesn't want to get you into wrestling?
No. I mean, I don't hate it or anything like that. Like, I could sit down and watch it. It's just... The following it and being a fanatic, and it's the same reason I don't like follow football or baseball or anything. It's like all the statistics and shit. Like you even said a minute ago, like this guy's a heel this week. Like what happens if you show up thinking he's the bad guy and he's the hero this week and you missed one? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're a kid, like, you know, the kid heroes don't really make a heel turn. Like John Cena, you know, they know that he's like Superman to the kids, and they're not going to have him turn into a bad guy anytime soon. Although I wish they would.
Bryan, did you like wrestling when you were growing up, though? Like the, you know, Hogan and those guys? Sting, Ultimate Warrior?
I loved the cartoon.
Nice.
And Glow.
Oh, I like
Gorgeous
Glow.
Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Amazing. Amazing. I can't believe anyone else but me knows. I thought I was the only one at friggin' 2 in the morning watching that.
No way, man. Hollywood and Vine, Mount Fuji.
Yes.
Attaché.
Oh, was somebody actually called Attaché?
Yeah. She was the military chick.
Oh, God. That's right.
Who was the chick from Damascus, Syria? I remember she was like I can't remember her, but she was my favorite.
Wasn't she actually called Natasha?
Oh, I don't remember, man. But that was like, I thought I was the only idiot that was up at 2 in the morning with a prepubescent boner watching the
world. Wow, you pretty much described my experience, too. Yeah.
In my house, it was more entertaining to watch my grandfather watch wrestling because he'd get all worked up about it.
Geez.
Start screaming at the screen.
You know, I have a similar story, Chris. I never really understood why my dad, who always made fun of wrestling, nevertheless would not mind watching Glow with me. And until years later when I looked those women up and realized, oh, that's why.
That's hilarious. They need to bring that back.
They do, in all its 80s glory.
With 80s hairstyles.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And just to round out the discussion, did you ever see the movie No Holds Barred with Hulk Hogan?
I believe I did, although every time I think of it, I just think of the Rocky movie he was in.
It was called No Holds Barred. He was like this wrestler, and the villain was Debo from Friday. I forget what his name is.
Oh,
he played the real actor.
He played, yeah. Zeus in the movie,
Zeus,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I totally remember that.
That movie was on cable the other day. It's hilarious.
A classic.
I mean, I actually saw that movie in the theater. I mean, I can't believe it.
I probably did too.
Now, the last wrestling movie I saw was The Wrestler.
I heard that's good.
That's actually a really good movie.
Oh, it is. It is a very good movie. How to describe it? It's just, you know, it's about a has-been who's trying to find one last kind of redemption in his life, you know? So it's one of those really great sports movies that transcends its sport.
I'll have to check it out. I think it was modeled after a real wrestler's life, if I'm not mistaken.
It could have been. I think they had the actual Sheik on it as well.
The Iron Sheik?
Yeah.
Iron Sheik. Oh. That guy's awesome.
Yeah.
That guy's hilarious.
Yeah. He's definitely aged too, but.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think he's lost his mental faculties as well.
I heard that happened long before he aged, though. So I heard he really loves cocaine.
Yeah.
Hell of a drug.
Hell of a drug.
Yeah. Yeah. The Iron Sheik, mind you, who's probably like from Dayton, Ohio. yeah. So anyway, we got off on quite a wrestling tangent there. And I think that more or less concludes my update. And before we get into tonight's topic, of course, we have to get into some news. I know that you guys have been out there scouring the headlines as usual for the latest in news and events. And we will go live on scene with our reporter, Chris, first. What's been going on, man?
Actually, I only have one real tidbit right now for geeky news. Earlier, I had mentioned that the Amazon had put out pilots for people to vote on. And the one I liked the most was Man in the High Castle, which is based off a Philip K. Dick book. And it got the green light, so it is going to become a series.
Awesome.
And the other series that also got a green light is a comedy called Mad Dogs, and a documentary series called The New Yorker Presents, as well as a couple of younger kid shows, Just Add Magic, and The Stinky and Dirty Show for the preschool level audience.
Cool. Sounds awesome.
So interesting green lighting going on. Excellent. And I think we can now green light our next reporter's, report. Cam, what you got?
I tried to go with the topic a little bit and look up some space news since we're going to be talking about NASA. Mars One, the mission that is going to be sending a bunch of people to Mars to basically try to set up a colony in several years, has narrowed their search down to 100 people. They started originally with over 200,000. There are now 100 left, 39 Americans, 31 from Europe, 16 from Asia, 7 from Africa, and 7 from Australia. And they will chop that down to just a final group of 24 who will prepare for colonization of Mars in 2025, which I think is pretty awesome.
Now, this is the one-shot mission, right?
Yeah, you go and that's it. You're not coming back. Like you're gone. Just see you later.
And this is the one for which they will be filming a reality show too, right? To kind of motivate it or something, or to maybe raise funds, I thought. Or am I wrong?
I'm sure they will have all sorts of hype leading up to it, but I mean it's not for 10 years, so.
Sure.
I mean, it's going to be a 7-month journey to get there, and then you're there. That's your new home for the rest of your life.
Enjoy Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Some scientists in the UK have found evidence supporting the theory that the Earth was seeded by extraterrestrial beings.
Oh.
And that's how life started here. Astrobiologist Milton Wainwright led a team of researchers at the University of Buckingham, and they have discovered a microscopic metal sphere in the dust of some of their atmospheric balloon testing equipment that is made of titanium, vanadium, and some viscous liquid, which includes a biological core. And they are coming to the conclusion that it is a seed from the cosmos. So, hey, who knows? Maybe we are just the seeds of some other civilization that is trying to populate the galaxy.
Maybe we were Mars's life insurance plan.
Yeah, indeed. Exactly.
How interesting. I will say, if we should ever meet our makers, I would ask what kind of a psychopath plants the seeds and then does not bother to tend to the garden after that. But
yeah, or maybe they're just on a scale of magnitude, you know, time-wise that we're just we just can't keep up with, right?
Right, right.
You know, it brings back memories of that, what was that Alien sequel that just came out recently? Prometheus,
yes.
Yeah, very similar to
that. Well, seeing as how gardeners like to weed and prune and trim, I'm not a fan of them coming back.
Yeah, we may not be a very good very good reuniting.
True.
This was sort of, I guess, space related, you know, just thinking of materials and stuff that we could take into space if we were ever going to explore beyond our own galaxy. It turns out that the strongest biological material known to man is the tooth of the ordinary garden snail. Didn't know if you guys knew that, but the it's not a very interesting organism on its own, but its tooth happens to be the strongest material in the world, biological material.
I knew that. I tangled with one when I was a kid and nearly lost an arm. They are tough bastards.
Yeah, so that was, I thought, was pretty interesting.
It is.
And to round out the news for me, Tom, I know you're going to be excited about this, and I know you don't like to do the news. You just like to comment, so I figured I would make sure I got it into my news extravaganza today. Nintendo released their sales report for their Amiibo figures.
Oh, boy.
And it is off the charts. They sold close to 6 million Amiibos last year. Now they are planning on a whole new line of Amiibos that are going to come with collectible cards. They're going to be called the Amiibo NFC cards. And they'll be linked to unlocking different things on the Wii U. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some other shticks and gags that they throw in with the new generation of Amiibos and cards. But I will tell you that the most interesting thing that I found in the story is that Mario is not the most liked or popular Amiibo. Can you guys guess who is?
Link.
Yeah, Link.
You're absolutely correct. In Japan, the U.S. and Canada and Europe, Link is number one. In U.S., Canada, and Europe, Mario's number two. In Japan, Kirby is actually number two. And Mario's number three. The only region, main sales region that has Mario number one is Australia, followed by Pikachu and then Link.
Come on, Australia, get with the program.
Yeah.
Brian, just out of curiosity, what made you say Link?
It was the second character that I could think of.
Fair enough. Wow, Ken, that was a bundle of news. If I had to encapsulated, I'd say that we could fund the mission to Mars if Nintendo donated all their Amiibo money.
They need a Mars Amiibo.
And we brought with us an army of snails to attack any hostile creators who might have seeded our planet in the past.
Yeah, well, that would be awesome. But I mean, just as an aside, guys, I mean, you know, we did the episode last week about, you know, if we could have any job in the world. I mean, if, you know, bringing that same, I guess, suspension of disbelief into this episode, if you could be one of those 24 people that in 10 years had to say goodbye to the Earth forever and go live on Mars, would you do it? I mean, honestly, would you do it?
Yeah. Yep. Sure.
You really would, Tom.
Yeah. What else am I going to do? I mean, honestly, what are you going to do on Earth that's going to compare to going to
dying
another?
Horribly on Mars?
In the cold vacuum of rust-colored space?
You know? You probably will come to an awful end, but my God, you'll... No human in history has been there. Like, that is a great way to die if you've got to die. And you do have to die.
Yeah, that would leave a pretty strong legacy, I guess.
If it was 20 years ago, I would say yes, but not now.
I mean, are you saying that because of family concerns, Chris?
Yeah, family, and I'd be 50 by the time I leave. So, you know, I think I'd probably be the first one once all the food ran out to be put on the plate, so.
Well, I mean, not necessarily because they've got...
Because I don't have enough meat in my bones?
No. Well, yeah, but I mean, the range of ages, I guess they're trying not to be ageist, but I'm sure these guys will probably get cut down when they go down to the 24. But the age ranges from in the 100 that they're at now range from 19 to 60. So if someone actually did, one of those 60-year-olds did go, that would mean that it wouldn't be till they would leave at 70. Which I think is kind of odd, but
I mean, assuming they can withstand the rigors of launch, which I think would be the physically like taxing thing would be getting into orbit, and I guess maybe reentry on the other end. Like, you know, if you're getting into the later stages of life, why not spend your final days on some grand adventure?
True. No, yeah. I mean, from his or her perspective, yeah. But I mean, if from a planning perspective, I mean, you're putting all this time, effort, money into this project. And you're only sending 24 people, you probably want someone who, you know, people who've got at least a good, you know, 30, 40, 50 years left in them to live there if it goes that long.
Something tells me they're not going to be alive too long on Mars. I mean, I hate to say it, but you are going there to fucking die in a few years. I mean...
Well, I mean, I think the idea is more will follow, you know? I mean, you know, to resupply and, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't think they're just going to stick them there and be like, all right, guys, you know, talk to you on the satellite radio. You know?
I mean, if they can put this mission together, I mean, there's just the sheer amount of radiation dosage that you're going to take in is going to shorten your life significantly, even with shielding, I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're going to die cold and cancerous in fairly short order. That's just my... But even with that being my perception of it, I would still do it.
Yeah, there is a self-published book that actually is climbing the charts. I can't remember the title for the life of me. But that's the whole setup is this guy is marooned on Mars. Part of the reason why it's popular is because the guy is an engineer and he really goes through everything he would have to do in order to create some sort of sustainable habitat for a while to keep him alive. And I think the first line in the book is, well, I'm fucked.
yeah, you are.
Pretty much.
It's a foregone conclusion that you're going to live a short and pretty tough life. So, I don't know. I mean, would you rather die 20 years sooner on another planet or, you know, end up some drooling, you know, vegetable 20 years later here on Earth, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to be 80 and, you know, in Vegas with hookers and coke. And
oh, yeah. Well, don't we all? Don't we all? But
yeah. I mean, because at that point, who cares, right? But, you know, I don't think there's going to be much of that on Mars.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I could pass that opportunity up, to be truthful.
Oh, man. That rounds out my news.
Okay, Brian, how about you? Are you planning on any trips to Mars? Any intergalactic news we should know about?
Sadly, I did not make the 100 cut. I did not make the 10,000 cut. Willing to die horribly on Mars, not desirable to, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying I would want to go there and croak. I mean, ideally, I would like to be the first person in a thriving colony. But realistically, man, you got to accept that risk, right?
My news is far more terrestrial and far more selfish. I'm just excited. One of my favorite bands is going to be in Fort Lauderdale, actually, like, in town, not just, like, you know, on this continent in May. Nightwish, Sabaton, and Delane are playing Revolution.
Cool. When is that?
May 9th.
Okay.
Revolution and May 8th at House of Blues in Orlando.
Cool. So, Ganza goes?
Yeah. I'm all about it.
Awesome, man. And what else you got? Anything?
That's it.
Okay, that's pretty terrestrial.
That's
but...
not enough?
Hey, I don't know, man. I thought maybe, you know, you knew something about some, like, trip to Europa or something that they had planned, and I was going to try to sign up for that one.
I think that's actually a NASA project, by the way.
The Europa mission? Yeah, I believe they want to send probes. They want to do the far more practical thing of sending probes. Which, actually, Chris, is a perfect segue into tonight's topic. You had, now that we've finally gotten around to it, before the universe comes to a state of, like, what's the universe supposed to do in the end? Freeze or whatever?
Cooling, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we finally got to tonight's topic, I should mention, Chris, you brought this up. You wanted to talk about NASA, and we will give you the floor in a minute. I will just say that while I share the sentiment you expressed prior to the show about manned missions being way cooler, I do understand the practical side of unmanned missions, at least for preliminary data gathering. With that said, though, take it away, man. The topic is NASA. We have an idea where it's going to go, but I'll let you kind of guide the conversation from the outset, man. What do you got?
Well, you know, first off, I'd just like to say that for me, asteroids are nature's way of saying, hey, how's that space program? You know, it's the final frontier. It's the place where we should be aiming to go. And it just frustrates me that, you know, in my lifetime, okay, I'm going to be honest with the audience here. You know, there were spacewalks happening on TV, and the head nurse wouldn't let my mom hold me because she was afraid I would be dropped in the awe and amazement of watching a spacewalk on television. You know, we went to the moon, and then, you know, what, like 2 years ago, the biggest thing we did is, for as far as getting a human being somewhere, was a really high jump. You know, how many miles in the air, I don't remember. But still, I mean, you would have thought within 30 years after being on the moon, we would also be somewhere else, or at least getting somewhere else. And it just frustrates me, especially when I hear that constantly people want to cut NASA's budget, and somehow that the money that NASA's budget is going to, you know, save is going to somehow fix something else in our budget. I don't even think people really realize, and probably more realistically don't care, how small the budget is. And yet all the money that's been spent in that budget has come back to us 100-fold. I mean, our 21st century lifestyle is based off most of the technology that came out of NASA. You know, so why are we doing this? Why are we always trimming back when we should be spending more? At least for, you know, the rebound on technology, job creation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I'll say this, and then, of course, I'll let the other guys chime in so I don't just monopolize things. NASA is held to what I call the pothole standard. Until every pothole is fixed, there's just no money for NASA. We've got problems here on Earth. We have to take care of everything from a hangnail to, you know, you name it before everybody's satisfied. People just, a lot of people view NASA as an extravagant waste of money. And I honestly do not understand
because
why.
The impression I get is basically they want the money. They have their own pet projects. They hope that they can get the money for. That 9 times out of 10, it's mostly an agenda thing and a short-sighted thing as well.
Much like we need jobs, so, you know, let's dump sludge into the Everglades. Yeah. Okay. Brian Cam, what are your thoughts?
I don't know what caused it. Maybe it's, you know, the government's fault, or maybe it was just disillusionment with what we found there. Maybe everybody expected, you know, jetpacks in 1984 or something like that. But people don't dream these days.
True.
To me, it's just an extremely short-sighted view. You know, I mean, sure, if you're in a position where you're worrying about putting food on the table, obviously you don't care about space or those kind of things. But you know what? It's sort of the same issue that comes up with the environment and, you know, all other sort of forward-thinking ideals. The problem is just self-interest and selfishness. People just care about them and their lifestyle, and, you know, why not throw that plastic, you know, bottle just into the river? Because, you know what, I'm going to be dead in a few years anyway, and, you know, I'll let someone else worry about it. Same thing with space. I mean, you know, no one is thinking forward in terms of, you know, on a scale of, you know, 200, 300, 500 years. You know, we're limited by our lifespan, so... unless you have some real visionaries in high places in the government pushing and making sure that these things are funded, and, you know, the you know, not just space exploration, but, you know, the environment here on Earth is preserved, we're just going to keep running into the same problem, being short-sighted, and unfortunately it might be too late, you know, before we need to do something.
In my experience, people who express the, you know, screw space, we should focus on our problems here, are typically the same people who have that view of a lot of things. They can't really see past the end of their own nose and their own life experience and what helps them. And, like, never mind the very compelling case some have made for, like, having a backup plan for humanity, just the pursuit of knowledge and pushing boundaries for the sake of doing so doesn't resonate with them. Like, to me, expanding human knowledge and exploring new frontiers is a goal in and of itself that, as intelligent creatures, we should strive for at all times.
You know, and there's a huge level of irony to that, because these people, as they're talking about on their cell phone, which half the materials in that cell phone are designed or by spin-off technologies from NASA, you know, that work off GPS, all of that was defense in NASA as well. And I mean, it gets to the point where somebody gets on my case. I'm like, does your grandmother have a hip implant? Yes or no? Oh, they do? Well, I'll tell you what. If you don't like NASA, you think that money's a waste, tell your grandmother to give her hip back. Because the titanium in her hip came from NASA.
Right. Well, and even, Chris, you know, taking it even further, I mean, yeah, those things are great. But, I mean, if you really look at the statistics and the numbers, it's just a fraction of the yearly budget that is paid towards NASA. And its economic impact far outweighs the amount that's put in by the government. I mean, they put in what I think 18, 20 billion or so a year into NASA.
Less.
But probably, yeah, so less than that. But, you know, if you really go back and look at the studies, I'm not going to get too technical on you guys, but the economic impact state by state and, you know, throughout the country in terms of jobs created, taxes paid, other, because remember, it's not just NASA too, but they have tons and tons of companies that do work for them and contract employees and, legal work and environmental work and all kinds of subcontractors that do all kinds of other things. So all of that money that gets generated by the work that they do is a direct economic impact and a direct boon to the different states that they happen in and the country as a whole. So it's such a short – I mean, it more than pays for itself every year. And it's something that we direly need in terms of, you know, moving the, I guess, societal consciousness forward, if you guys catch my drift. And just for whatever reason, people just aren't into it.
I think most people fail to grasp the sort of multiplier effect. I think most people kind of view it as an inverse. Like, for what we spent to get these technologies as a side effect of NASA – in their minds, we could have just like developed the technologies intentionally. And you know what I mean? We could have just put our money towards inventing a hip implant. They don't understand the impact that a concerted national effort towards research and development for the furtherance of science has, I guess. You know what I mean? They just, I mean, again, though, and I hate to stereotype, but most people who fall in the anti-NASA camp probably don't even think this deeply. It's just dumb space. I mean, that's it. And I don't mean to use any particular accent when I say that. I'm just saying.
Yes, you did. That's my accent, damn it. But yeah, I mean, I think part of it has been that NASA has a branding problem. I wish that the little logo, even on grandma's hip, that said NASA on it, for every little spin-off technology. Your sunglasses that have UV protection need a little NASA logo on them. You know, every little cell phone needs a NASA logo on them. Of course, I guess the flip side of that would be then people would be wondering, why is NASA everywhere?
Why are they making cell phones?
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, if they're so ubiquitous, they must be this huge conspiracy. I don't know. But I've got to slow down for a moment. Whew, slow down. I'm just, it works me up, the frustration. I really wish that they could do that, that people would be aware of where everything comes from when it comes related to NASA. I think they would be shocked and surprised. It might change a few minds, maybe.
Well, here's another interesting question to ponder, and maybe Brian can chime in on this because he's the one who kind of cited these figures prior to the episode. People aren't impressed when you tell them that NASA pays all these dividends, but a lot of those same people will then turn around and say it's perfectly fine to maintain this monstrous military because it generates economic activity. And as an example, Brian, what does an aircraft carrier cost?
Well, we looked up numbers before the show, and that one class,
Ford, yeah.
Which I don't even know, is that like the largest class or just the most recent?
The most recent. I don't know if it's the largest, but it's the newest, I think.
So not necessarily the most expensive. But that one Ford class aircraft carrier is $13 billion.
God.
And we're developing, what did it say, 3 this year?
Yeah, something like that.
Jesus. Just develop 2. I don't even want you to cut. I don't want you to give back. Just spend less on aircraft carriers.
Yeah, I mean, $13 billion for a single one of these carriers, never mind all the other goodies that come with it. And I think we looked up that we built one of those in 2013 to the tune of $13 billion. And I think NASA's budget for that same year was like just over $17 billion. I mean, all of NASA's budget was barely more than what this one ship cost, right?
Yeah.
Why build one when you can build 3 at triple the price?
Right, exactly. Our minds are in such a place that that's an easy sell. What we need these like $13 billion aircraft carriers to stop ISIS.
Yeah,
it just seems silly, man. I don't know. I don't really understand what causes people's priorities to be where they are.
Well, I mean, again, I don't mean, you know, and I don't want to get too political here because we've done that before, and it's, you know, we just don't need to go off too far into that tangent. But, you know, it really all comes down to pork. I mean, it's, you know, the politicians want to bring those dollars to their state so they can get reelected and keep pushing the military-industrial complex and, you know, provide jobs and money and, you know, all kinds of stuff for the constituents of their states. And so they're all like-minded and they all want the same thing. So they all work together to get these things funded. And that's just how it works. So, and it's a lot easier to sell, well, you know, ISIS is going to come kill us if we don't have these aircraft carriers, as opposed to, well, we really need to figure out a long-term solution for, you know, what we're going to do once we completely destroy this planet, you know, to your constituents, because that provides a real tangible cause and effect when you're talking about the military. And it's easy to set up, you know, manufacturing and things that people know how to do. You don't need to be, you know, a rocket scientist to work at a military contracting company. You just have to be able to, you know, have some sort of technical knowledge, or, you know, maybe even just be like an assemblyman or you know, a lathe operator or something like that. Whereas, you know, the NASA type jobs are a lot, you've got to be a lot smarter and, you know, have a lot more expertise and, you know, technical soundness to your craft.
But that's actually a myth, because I've talked to guys that their job was literally to scrub the space shuttle.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course you're going to have those, but I mean, you know, I would say 90% of those jobs are, you know, really higher order thinking engineers and or mathematicians. Whereas, you know, I think it would probably be flip-flopped at a military contractor. You know, you have probably 10, 20% of the guys that think the stuff up and do the R&D, but then the other 80% are just sort of the, you know, worker bees that just, you know, put things together. So it's just the path of least resistance in terms of getting money to your state, getting money to fund your state's coffers, and then everyone in that state being happy because there's lots of jobs and because there's lots of taxes being paid, and then you get reelected, and so you just keep the cycle going.
And it really is short-sighted, because after that carrier is built, what's next?
Well, then you need, you know, maintenance and upkeep, and you've got to keep it, you know, retrofitted after 10 years. And that's more jobs for people in your state. You know, it's just, it's a never ending cycle, unfortunately.
And don't forget, the Navy maybe requested 4 of them, but we're going to build 6 because, you know, the congressman, as you mentioned, needs to bring jobs home. So we're going to over deliver to the Navy on these, you know?
Yep.
Thinking about this, though, I wonder if we could make, if there's something we could do politically to sell space exploration as sort of an imperative along the lines of military. I mean, this is kind of a hard sell, and sort of like, you know, an Armageddon or Deep Impact style a plot unfolding. I'm not sure how we would do it. But couldn't we make more of a case such as the one Elon Musk made, wherein he basically stated that, you know, we want to be elsewhere so that if something should happen to Earth, we don't all die with it. You know, sort of a, I believe he called living on another planet sort of a an insurance policy against extinction, if I recall. I don't know. Can't that case be made, or are people just still too short-sighted to even buy that?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't even care about the planet they live on right now, I mean, they're not caring. They're not caring about any other planets.
People can't pick up a soda can, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, people spit gum on the sidewalk. Like, honestly, we're mostly just like, how are we not? I mean, we're just troglodytes on balance, right? I mean,
pretty much.
I mean, half the knuckle draggers would shit on the street if you let them. God, yeah. This is turning into an I Hate Humanity episode.
No, I mean, but, you know, I mean, I think, like, you know, we've talked about before. I mean, I think there is hope for humanity. I mean, I think there, you know, with each generation, it gets better, but, you know, we just, hopefully it's not too late by the time we've, you know, figure things out.
Somebody mentioned marketing earlier, and I'm thinking that's what we need. We need to make Spacey super badass, just like the military.
It was. And then it was back in the 1960s in the Apollo program. Every kid be an astronaut.
Right, but, you know, Chris, a lot of that was, you know, the Cold War. I mean, it's the same thing as ISIS. We're worried about the Russians. You know what I mean? The only way to get people, you know, people's attention is to appeal to that, you know, that factor of, well, you know, is my my shelter, my food, or my security threatened, you know? And if one of those three things is not threatened, then, you know, people have a hard time paying attention.
Yeah, the space race was certainly a proxy for the Cold War. And it's so sad. Such a sad commentary on, like, just the state of the American psyche then and now. I guess it was an easy sell when it was like you had cool guys like Buzz Aldrin, you know, who was like, not to in any way impugn that guy, but they had cool fighter pilot names because they were cool fighter pilots and they came out of a military background, and we were going to stick our rockets in space before the Russians even got theirs out of their pants, man. I mean, that's like how badass we were back then. And I mean, absent that machismo, like, what's the selling point? Like, we're going to, you know, you don't get the, like, fighter ace astronauts, you get like the biochemist, you know, going to space, and she's just not as interesting.
Maybe it's because I come from a writing slash just straight up lying background, but you just need to spin it. If you're worried about your security, you just want to open Gitmo on the moon.
There you go. There you go. This is where
these terrorists are too dangerous to live on our planet.
The next Bin Laden.
We need to raise taxes to get rid of them.
God, you might have it, Brian. Like, we're going to send these ISIS, crazies to live in the Sea of Tranquility.
So what you're saying is we should propose a Australian version of the moon is a harsh mistress.
Absolutely.
Penal colony on Mars or the moon.
Privatized prison. There you go. These marijuana addicts gotta go.
Well, you know, just an example of that whole Cold War philosophy. Wasn't the budget for NASA in the 60s like 4.4% of the entire budget?
Yes, we looked that up. So the key figures we plucked out of, I believe, Wikipedia, full disclosure, was in 58, NASA's budget constituted 1/10 of a percent of the national budget. 1964, which was the height of things, it constituted 4.41% of the budget, or national spending, whatever the actual figure is. And today, it's 0.45%, or four times what we spent at the outset, but by my reckoning, what is that, 1/10 of what we spent in 64? So, you know, we've kind of backslid a bit. That's what blows my mind. We blow money on some really silly, frivolous stuff, probably far in excess of what we pay for NASA. And yet, it's a constant, what's the word I'm looking for? Whipping boy, I guess, for so-called budget hawks. Yeah. Are they budget hawks? What do you call people that want to slash the budget?
Yeah, I would. I don't know, but that sounds like a good term to me.
The choices are budget hawks or space misers. You can choose one of the two.
The only good thing about that is at least that is a bipartisan.
It's bipartisan to not want to spend money on NASA.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's the one silver lining I can think of. At least there's one bipartisan effort in Washington. Screw NASA.
I love that our politicians can come together to shortchange the future. That's great.
Well, you know, maybe it's because some of us look at it differently. I mean, you know, people kept going, was there water on Mars? Because if there's water on Mars, there might be life. And I was like, that's not the exciting part of water being on Mars. The exciting part is if there's water on Mars, we can get to Mars and live there. You know, that's why it was exciting to me to find water, because it meant we could do something with Mars. If there's no water, then it would be much harder for us to set anything up there.
Well, we can also, if I understand things right, make propellant to come back, like to blast off from the surface. Mm-hmm. So that's another big bonus in favor of water on the planet if it's there. But you know what occurs to me? What would really sell people on Mars is if we discovered oil there. Why don't we just lie? I mean, here.
Well, no, exactly. If we found a way to motivate the people who want to make money to find a profit in Mars or somewhere else in the solar system, they'll get on board. In fact, aren't the Google guys getting together to go do some asteroid mining here? Because they're pretty sure that they can find a lot of minerals that are rare here are pretty common out in space.
I believe that is true. Not Google proper, but some alums or investors or people who got like lots of Google money. Yeah, they want to do like basically an asteroid wrangling and exploitation company where they mine things that are hard to find on Earth from these asteroids that they would kind of tow into orbit around our planet. Kind of a cool idea. I just hope they don't, like...
Yeah, kind of a cool idea until the asteroid slams into the Pacific Ocean.
Right, right. The Earth. We dropped that one, guys. Sorry.
I don't want that. I don't know if I want that responsibility in the hands of some ex-Googlers.
Yeah. Our algorithm was sound. We don't know what happened. But it's kind of a cool idea. I mean, it would put a definite commercial spin on things, and I'm assuming they would be pulling in asteroids full of, like, rare metals and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, gold. Gold is it's rare here, and it's common. In fact, it would probably cause a gold crash once they start bringing the gold back.
Oh, well.
It'd be everywhere now.
But that's useful for industry. So maybe
the
intrinsic value of gold goes down. We would still pay inflated prices, no doubt, for gold rings, just as we do for diamonds. But it would have a good effect on industry, I would think.
And the rappers,
definitely.
The rappers would be happy.
Yeah, you would see bling the likes of which mankind has never thought possible.
Gold armor.
So, if I'm coming up with a way to sum this up, we have to make space something that appeals to our greed in order to get people to want to go there, right?
Well, I mean, that was the major motivation for getting to the other continent, right?
Yeah.
First, it was trying to find a fast way to India to make a buck. Then it was like, oh, holy crap, here's a whole, new continent. Well, we can't find anything yet. We'll tell people there's gold here and motivate them to come here, and then we'll figure out once they're here what to do with them.
Right. So we could tell people there's gold and oil on Mars, and most idiots will have no idea that both of those things are probably false. Well, I don't know. I guess there would be gold, wouldn't there? I don't know what geological forces have to go into play to result in veins of gold, but whatever. I'll buy it, so I assume most people will too. There's like huge oil reserves and gold on Mars. That's our line, okay? And probably a first-year geology student could confirm whether or not that's possible.
If you pay them enough.
But right. Well, we get the people there, then we'll figure out what to do. Let's just lie again to get people there.
I mean, that's why they named Greenland Greenland. I mean, they wanted people to think it was a great place to live.
Yeah.
When they showed up, it was a shithouse.
Let's rename Mars like Golden Corral or something, and
then you get a ton of scooters.
Right. You get a touch of people on those scooters.
More 70-year-olds. There it is. Mars is the new nursing home. And actually, in a way, that would be kind of that would be an idea, because it has less gravity, so then it would be less stress on your bones. It would be, a place to get your loved ones once they can't stand up at 1G gravity anymore.
Did you take the movie WALL-E as a guide to life? Well, we've got a planet with less gravity where you'll be right at home.
Oh, boy.
I guess the next stage is we're going to have to fight the unsexiness of the best way to get going into space, which would be a space elevator versus a cool, sexy rocket.
Space elevator's pretty fucking sexy.
I agree, but I don't know if Mr., JQ Public would feel the same way.
No, that sounds awesome. It's like going on, I mean, they're not very fast moving, what I understand, so it's like basically going on a cruise, but, then you end up in space. I would love to build one of those.
Holy shit, Tom, you're a genius.
What?
There we go. Along with the cargo, you can have a view no one else can see for days and days in our luxurious apartment aboard the space elevator. That's genius.
Yeah.
People go whale watching for months and never see anything? You can watch the stellar whales.
There you go.
Oh, sorry. Come back again. They weren't out this time.
Oh, I saw one, but what was the string hanging from the top of it?
From what I understand, like, space elevators will be very slow. Like, you will not be rocketing up there at any great speed. So, I don't know. It would be kind of like a cruise. Like, you just wake up every day or however long it takes. You're just slowly ascending. And next thing you know, you're, like, at the edge of the atmosphere. That might be kind of cool.
You're just going to put a video game penny slot machine right there at the side, and you'll be fine.
And there you go. By the way, what's holding us back right now? The materials, like, necessary?
Hopefully Cam's snail teeth will help.
Yeah, you never know.
I think snails are the key. They could chew their way through any problem.
I'm going to be investing in snail farm.
Please do.
Let me change the topic a little bit and just ask you guys, How do you think that the universe is going to end? Just to take it sort of in a little Doctor Who, you know, because you guys know I love Doctor Who sort of direction. We're talking about space and going into space and the hindrances of going into space and our issues. Well, okay, so we have this big, vast universe. What are the benefits of going into space, you know, aside from finding a new planet if ours, you know, gets destroyed or we can't use it anymore? Assuming we do that and the human race lives on for billions of years, what do we think is going to be the ultimate ending?
That's something I've contemplated. And, you know, of course, it gets into just the ridiculously far-fetched. But given a human race that lived for billions of years, who knows what powers we might actually, come to master, such that maybe the nature of the universe as we know it is that it'll reach some frozen state, but we're able to avert our own destruction. Or maybe as some of these crazy physicists think, there are, you know, parallel, what are they, dimensions or universes into which you could, you could shift, such that if ours came to an end, we could just like take up occupancy elsewhere. I mean, given a limitless lifespan, I think the human race could do anything. I mean, better than any other creatures we know of, right? We have a better chance than, like, say, dolphins right now of averting the ultimate end that everybody right now thinks must come.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's like taking a longer view of the notion of, you know, why do you want to live to see tomorrow? I don't know. I mean, tomorrow's full of possibility, right?
Absolutely. Well, and I guess that was sort of more of my pointed question. Well, do we think that the universe is just going to cool down and, you know, because heat is a finite resource, right? I mean, it's at some point there will be no more chemical reactions to generate heat, and, you know, all the stars will burn out, you know, all the chemicals used to generate heat will be gone, and then life is, you know, I guess conceivably not viable anymore. Or is it going to be some sort of, you know, I've heard of the, you know, the Big Bang, scientists theorize that there's going to be the Big Crunch, where at some point, gravity will take hold, and as the universe is expanding, it will then reach some sort of terminal velocity, you know, terminal, you know, period or whatever it is, and then start coming back on itself and, you know, condense back into whatever it was before the Big Bang and then start over. I'm just curious to see what you guys think as, you know, your end of the universe theories.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of both of those. I'll let the other guys chime in. I think the end, unless we're able to intervene, would end up being bad for us, based on my understanding. What do you guys think?
I'm a fan of the Big Crunch, and I can't tell you why. Scientifically, I don't have the answer, but I like the singularity and then exploding again into a new universe, which I think kind of explains string theory.
And is more poetic.
Well, I just like the idea that as things are coming back together, we will relive our lives backwards.
Oh, really? Is that kind of...
Yeah, there's like a theory that time will then move backwards.
Oh, I get to demature back into being an adorable baby again. I can't wait.
It's almost like we've all seen the Battlestar Galactica reboot, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of like that. Like, everything that's happened before will happen again. You know, it's like this revolving door of sort of explosion, life, reversion, explosion, life, reversion. Like, you know, that's sort of the theory, I think.
So then my question is, is this the first time or is this the second time we're going in reverse and we don't know it?
If I'm living in a reboot, I'm going to blow my brains out.
So yeah, I'm with Brian. I hate both philosophical and religious conventions that revolve around, pun intended, recycling. And the notion that we're sort of in this constant expansion and contraction cycle is not at all romantic to me. It's actually kind of a downer because it just means, I mean, we've been here before and nothing this may be new to us, but objectively speaking, it's nothing special. This has all happened before. That makes me sad to think.
Well, I think with the theory of the heat death of the universe, it means the universe is actually going to just kind of turn into a soup before it's even halfway over. Like, you know, the universe is not going to have a really great midlife before it just goes into a complete Alzheimer's senility state for the other two-thirds of its existence.
Ugh, that doesn't sound any better. Can you guys paint a little bit more rosy picture of the end of the universe, please? This sucks.
Well, I'm going to be like one of those people we talked about earlier in the episode, and, you know, I doubt we're going to see it, so who cares? But I sort of like the idea of reliving my life backwards, you know, because like you said, Chris, who knows? Maybe this is the backwards portion. we don't know, you know? Then there are some other scientists that think that, like, the universe at just some point will just, you know, it's almost like a string, you know, and you pull it too hard and it just sort of collapses on itself, or just breaks, basically, because, you know, the gravity of everything is constantly spinning away from each other. And, you know, at some point that gravity is just going to rupture and, you know, maybe we'll have, you know, black holes everywhere. Who knows? I think really what it comes down to is we don't know what it's going to be. So live life, man, live life.
I think we should do our best to keep our race going as long as possible, because, you know, we may become masters of the universe. And
only one?
You never know.
What's that?
Only one universe?
Well, ours, and then we'll go on and we'll master other ones. We'll conquer universes in the grand American tradition. It'll be like Manifest University, and then we'll, like, take over other people's universes. And if they don't like it, well, they should have developed better technology, because now here we are. Screw you.
Is string theory the one that the theory that posits that there are infinite universes, and, like, anything that you can think of is possibly going on, and or it has to be going on in one of those universes?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. I think that's – isn't that Kaku guy's Michio Kaku's deal, where he – that's his sort of unifying theory for everything.
Yeah, the guy with the white hair that's on all the documentaries.
Yeah.
I like that guy. He's okay.
He's pretty cool. I wish we ought to have him. I'm sure he's not busy. He's not really famous. He'd probably come on our show if we asked him really nicely. He could explain this to us.
Yeah, right after Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Well, we got Neil's busy right now. I guess he's doing a TV show based on his podcast, but he told us we'd get him next month, so we'll have him on, and we'll see if Michio will come on. We're getting a pretty good guest list here.
In our head.
Actually, listening to this episode and us probably getting all this stuff wrong would dissuade any respectable physicist from coming anywhere near us. So,
well, hey, in some infinite universe, we do have him on our podcast, so I guess there's that.
Hey, in some infinite universe, I was more than a B student in physics, right?
Exactly.
Yes, in some universe somewhere, I should have my jetpack.
Chris, in this universe, are you satisfied that we gave a decent treatment to the topic of NASA as you envisioned
Indeed,
it?
Indeed, I do believe. I can say we have.
Hooray! Do we have anything else to talk about, guys, before we sort of make our grand exit from the universe?
Well, I didn't have this in my news, Tom, but it sort of popped up during the episode on my feed. Apparently, a new Alien movie has been greenlighted. The director will be Neil Blomkamp of District 9 fame.
Oh.
Actually, I really love that movie, actually, so I'm really excited about what he is going to do with the Alien franchise. And the studio was very, very clear in saying that it will be completely separate and apart from Prometheus 2, which is going to be made by Ridley Scott within the next year or two as well.
Oh, that's happening?
It is happening.
Yes. The answers to questions we have regarding the nature of the universe are to be found in those movies, I'm sure.
I think it's fate that just popped up right during the episode.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not going to hold my breath for Prometheus 2, but I'm excited about the Alien movie. And Chappie, too.
Chappie looks awesome.
Is that Blomkamp guy also doing that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's that, like, robotic. He's heavy into the robotic, like, exoskeleton type thing.
Awesome.
Alien slash robotic stuff.
So NASA may not get funded. The universe will likely end badly. But at least we have these movies to look forward to. I don't know how better to end this topic than just to say that. At the end of the day, who cares? None of this matters. And we should just live our lives day at a time. Forget about going to space. Forget about the environment. Just watch some cool movies. I give up on life. This is why, guys, I would take that one-way trip to Mars tomorrow.
Just send me a postcard.
Will do. But there is no need for our audience to give up, right? I mean, we're going to keep doing this until the end of time, right?
Absolutely. Until the crunch or the burnout or the cooling, whatever. We'll be here.
The big freeze.
All the way to episode one.
Yeah.
All the way back to episode one. Yay. Well, listeners interested in following us on that regression back to episode one, I guess, I'm not really sure how this works, but should probably still subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or whatever other podcatching software they happen to use. They should probably write us in reverse some favorable reviews and give us fewer stars, maybe? I don't know. And if reverse streaming interests you at all, I'm pretty sure you can do that on Stitcher.
Dislike us on Facebook, unfollow us on Twitter and Instagram, minus one us on Google Plus.
Yes.
I don't have any quippy reverse puns for my section of the outro. I'll just say blast off and head to our website, nerdtravaganza.com, and check out this and all of our back episodes, plus all of our other premium content. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel, and make sure that you send us an email at nerdtravaganza@gmail.com. Let us know what you like, dislike about the show.
And with all of that backwards housekeeping not yet taken care of,
hello.
Hello. Oh my god.
Was there enough cheese on that for you?
Yeah, that was a good one.